Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
On the Wintrust Business Lunch, banks doing well. Is that Farron Dogs? Thanks for joining us from Harrison Wallace Financial. Is that what is driving the market's uptick today?
Hi, John. Thanks again for having me. Yeah, that's definitely been a big part of it. They beat quite handedly in terms of their revenue growth. And most of that was net interest income from a year ago. You know, year over year, it's gone up significantly because of interest rates going up. And so those interest payments are really helping the coffers of the bigger banks for sure.
Yeah.
So that has definitely been, you know, a catalyst in this because they were certainly not expecting it.
But banks are paying out higher interest rates too, right?
They are, but you know, it's been interesting as I've been looking at different CD rates for the last few months for clients and even our own monies. The smaller banks and the online banks, of course, are definitely much more competitive than some of their larger peers. They're just not paying necessarily a competitive rate on those shorter term CDs. So their margins are definitely better than some of those smaller and more regional banks.
I'm sorry, are you saying that a smaller or online bank is paying a higher return, a higher savings account rate?
Savings, CDs, you know, high yield savings, in many cases, that is what's happening.
Mm-hmm. How is it that they're able to do that?
They're trying to get some of their to grow their deposits. So they're making it a lot more attractive, especially for the smaller and regional brick banks, so to speak.
Yeah.
So they're trying to bring back their depositors. There was a pretty significant outflow of depositors during, you know, the first quarter when SVB and First Republic were having all their issues. We were starting to see quite a bit of money transfer out of those smaller banks into the larger banks just as a sense of security to the investor or the depositor. So they have to be a little bit more competitive to draw those new investors back and depositors. And the online bankers, of course, they don't have the bricks and mortar to maintain, so they don't have quite the overhead that many of the brick and mortar banks do. So they can be a little more competitive with that as well.
So stocks rise as strong earnings come from some of the biggest banks. What were we up last on the Dow? I just saw the number. It was over 100, wasn't it?
It was up over 100. Yeah, it's given a little back. And the S&P and the NASDAQ, I believe they dipped into the red here recently. But, you know, they started strong. But obviously the NASDAQ it has had a pretty good run overall. And it's been a good week for the markets as a whole.
Yeah.
So
we've had a nice run the last couple of weeks here. What should I read into that? I mean, today it's banks. Maybe a few days ago it was somebody else. But is
right.
This tell me something larger than just these individual companies or groups?
Well, I think we're hopefully seeing a little bit of a broadening in this rally. Because really the first half of the year, most of the rally, for example, in the S&P was driven by the top eight stocks. You know, the top eight tech companies in the S&P make up about 28% of that market cap, and they're up over 40 to 50% year to date. So that makes a significant impact on the return of the S&P 500. But oh, by the way, we have 492 other stocks that really have not done a lot this year so far. And I'm hopeful that, you know, as you pointed out, we're finally trading maybe on earnings per share and revenue growth and profitability. Be nice to have a market that grows on that. And maybe this is what we're starting to see is the broadening of the market with this rally here. Earlier this week, obviously, it was driven mostly by the CPI number and the expectation that the Federal Reserve will maybe remain a little bit more dovish than as hawkish as it has been.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that that's the case, but it was a good number nonetheless. And it's good for the consumer to see some of these prices come down, certainly.
Farron Dawgs, founder and CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial, is on the line. We're just talking a little bit about the nice little run we've had on the Dow. Terry Savage reminded us the other day, Farron, that, you know, all of the doom and gloom, but we are not that far from the all-time high on the Dow, probably as close on the S&P. As much as things went down during the pandemic, we're within single-digit percentage points of all-time highs. It's not as bad as it once was, is it?
Right. No, it really isn't. And, you know, I just caution investors to really assess their portfolio and their risk tolerance, because I think, as I mentioned, I think last time I was on your show, is there's a lot of FOMO out there. People are afraid that they're going to miss out on this big run-up and that this is the start of something big. And I just like to caution investors that, you know, don't step out of your box for risk. Thankfully, there are some really attractive short-term things people can do. We haven't seen CD rates above 5% in over a decade. And, you know, for those investors that they just have to have more of a discipline, because I have already started to hear the conversations, oh, I was at a dinner party and I heard about this stock and this stock and this stock. And when we start hearing those things, it can be concerning, because we are at, you know, definitely almost all-time highs here, with definitely in 2023. But and I think it just gives a note of caution as we move forward, because some of this run-up has been very thin. You know, this has not been a broad-based, you know, rally throughout all the sectors. And so there may be a time where those that have been on fire, so to speak, are going to take a pause, and maybe, you know, other areas will start taking hold. So, you know, definitely participate, but be cautious and, you know, dollar cost average in. And because what happens many, many times is people maybe were too cautious last year. They pulled some money out of the market, you know, just wanted to be really defensive. And then we rally like we have now, and they get in 15% higher, and then the market takes a pause and goes down. So they get whipsawed back and forth. And we just really want to help our investors protect themselves from that emotional investment faux pas.
Well, I hear what you're saying, although I'm a little discouraged by hearing that, because I think... well, let me finish that.
I don't mean to be discouraging.
I'm like, bummer, yeah, dude, but here's the deal, because I think plenty of our listeners, maybe they've made up what they lost in the pandemic with their continual funding their investments, but relative to where they were 3 years ago, the market is still down. It's nearer to the all-time high, but once upon a time it was higher. So I think some of us are hoping that we've been waiting for a few years now to get back over that hump, and you are throwing a little caution on those hopes.
Well, I'm throwing a little caution, but I'm not saying that it isn't going to happen. But I think there are different tools that we can use now to get us over that hump a little bit safer. And so there are new products out there now that are very, like, inexpensive hedged equity, buffered ETFs that really allow an investor to participate in the market, but have some element of downside risk protection, you know, on the back end.
Right.
And so that can make an investor a lot more comfortable, you know, getting into this market, knowing they have a little bit of a cushion on the backside. And you couple that with some of the better interest rates that we are seeing in even the short-term CDs, and it's a methodical way of getting back up over that hump, so to speak.
Let me ask you about ETFs for just a second, though. And I've not heard of them described as buffered ETFs. I understand an ETF is like a sector-centric mutual fund, right, where you pick kind of an area. Is that what that is?
There are several different types of ETFs. There are ETFs that actually will track the broader indexes like the S&P and the NASDAQ with the QQQ. And then there are those that are focused much more on sectors such as technology or energy, financials. And then there are ETFs that actually dig a little deeper, and they'll go even into cybersecurity, artificial intelligence, you know, so you can really drill down and have some good exposure into some of those more niche areas.
Right. Well, is there a niche that you are liking right now in the ETFs? What do you mean by that? Buffered ETF?
Yeah, sure. I personally like, you know, I like what I see when I'm out and about and what I use. And for example, mobile payments. I think that that's an area that struggled really quite a lot last year in terms of performance. It really has not bounced back that much. And I don't know about you, but I see it more and more. Fewer and fewer places are taking cash. They want, you know, electronic or digital payment only. And we're seeing it on airlines. I'm seeing it at stores, restaurants, and that type of thing. And so I think that that's an area that's really interesting. I still like cybersecurity. I don't see cybersecurity going away. It struggled last year as well. It's had a little bit of a comeback here, but for the most part, has not rebounded, you know, nearly what it was down last year, as there was kind of more wholesale selling in the tech area.
Yeah.
But those are two areas that I think are really interesting and long-term plays.
Do you, maybe this is a shorter term question, but I mean, if I do have a given amount of money I'm putting into my mutual fund or my 401k or whatever, but it's going into equities, what about steering that money into something fixed that's going to get 4.5-5% right now?
Well, I think that that's a reasonable option if, you know, depending on your tolerance for risk. And I think what happened after the credit crisis of 08, when interest rates were virtually at zero, you know, just to kind of stem havoc, I think we were in a situation where the investor that was either close to retirement, risk averse, or in retirement was really struggling to find some decent fixed rates, right? And so they had to kind of reach out of their risk tolerance and dig into equities that maybe paid a reasonable dividend. And now they're in a situation where maybe they can take some of that risk off the table and reposition it into some of these 4.5-5%, you know, fixed types of interest. So it's definitely a reasonable way to go, depending on your tolerance for risk.
Well, that's higher than the inflation rate. I mean, at least, although if the market does well enough, it can outperform that too. But
sure,
you're not upside down relative to that right now with the rate that the way the interest rates have gone.
Right, and thankfully we are starting to see that inflation come down. Core inflation is still a little higher than I know what the Fed wants. The core is, I believe, at about 5%, 4.9, I believe. And, you know, their target is really to get to 2. So we do have a ways to go. And the problem is, you know, wage inflation has not really kept up with overall inflation if we look year over year. So the consumer has not necessarily had all of this extra money to, you know, to keep up with the basket of goods they were purchasing a year ago. So there's a little bit of that, you know, that going on, but it is certainly good to see these prices come back down. I don't think they're coming down across the board. I still go to the grocery store and I'm amazed at the cost of some of the things. I mean, but some have definitely come down. So I think that's a really, really good sign. And I think that the fact that, you know, companies still have a lot of cash, they do have, even from the pandemic, they still have a lot of money to put into either increasing their dividends, and, you know, expanding their operations. And hopefully we'll get back to a market that actually is trading on earnings, revenue, and fundamentals of stocks.
Yeah, right.
And
right,
as opposed to stimulus and interest rate concerns.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah, imagine that, a market that does that. The founder and CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial is Farron Dawgs. HarrisonWallace.com is the website. Nice to talk to you today. Thank you for joining us, Farron.
You too, John. Thanks so much.
Take
care.
Well, you betcha. Tom Appel joins us now and again, the publisher at Consumer Guide Automotive. He's also the host of a podcast at Consumer Guide called the Car Stuff Podcast. Tom, welcome back. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
There's so many different things to talk about when we talk to you. Let me just start off with the very broad, what's foremost in the car buying business these days? Where's the buzz?
The crazy story right now, and it seems like it's always been the crazy story, but it's especially interesting now, is Tesla. Tesla has reached a point where its sales growth was starting to stall. Other EV manufacturers were catching up with them, and Tesla has done something crazy. It has started discounting its cars. And the ramifications of this are huge. It has knocked down the price of the most affordable car, the Model 3, by about 25%. And the ripple effect is that people are buying more Teslas because they're a great value. Used Tesla prices are falling, so used EV prices in general are falling. And a lot of people who would have sold cars, a lot of manufacturers, EV makers who would have sold cars, are selling fewer cars because everyone's rushing over to the good deals at Tesla. It's a crazy situation.
Can the other manufacturers match their prices?
No, not necessarily. It's very expensive to build an EV, and it's looking like no one's really making money on them yet except for Tesla. Additionally, we're also seeing the ramifications of the new and modified federal tax credit situation on which there are very few vehicles that qualify.
Yeah.
So some of the vehicles that had been on this list are not on the list, and their sales are suffering as well.
I wanted to ask you about that, but would you recommend people buy a used EV?
Yes. I wouldn't hesitate to buy a used EV over a new EV. The situation you're looking at, and this is what everyone's always afraid of, is that the technology is going to pass this car up and that its value is going to drop. But I think there's always going to be a market for a reasonably priced EV that someone can drive locally. So there's no problem with that. One of the things that we're learning over time, and largely from Tesla, is that EV batteries are holding up for the life of the vehicle. This was a huge concern for years and years, that you'd have to pay the price of an EV battery, which can be substantial, right? $10,000, $20,000. But that's not happening. The batteries are holding up very well.
So what's the future then of combustible engines? Are we all going to go electric now?
That's a great story, and General Motors is coming under fire now for announcing that it's developing at least one more generation of its gasoline engines for big trucks. But it's looking like the adoption rates, or the adoption dates, are like 2030, 2035, when something like 65% of the new car market might be EV, which still leaves a huge amount of vehicles that are going to be powered by gasoline or diesel. So they're not going away anytime soon.
Still, think about that. If I live near a highway in my lifetime, it might be substantially quieter, right?
Oh, yeah. And anyone who's had the fun of driving near the new Amazon delivery vehicles, the ones built by Rivian, I live out here in Palatine, very near a sorting facility, those vehicles make no noise at all. It's wonderful to have them on the road instead of the old trucks.
What will the catalytic converter thieves do?
I guess they could try and steal batteries, but that's a very, very complicated thing to do.
Do you know anything about that? I remember we've talked about this with you before. And Kia was supposed to, I thought, do something to change the software so that it would be more difficult to steal a car anyway. Is anything being done along those lines?
Kia's quietly dealing with it. It was Hyundai and Kia, and made famous by the Hyundai and Kia boys on YouTube, and I think TikTok before that, had discovered a very simple way to steal the vehicles that were started still by a key, not the push-button start. Those vehicles were fine. The key-started vehicles.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be ridiculously easy to steal those cars. And the problem was that there wasn't any sort of mechanism that forced the car to recognize the key, which is usually how that security system works. So Kia has offered a number of upgrades to people, including, in some cases, the club, which seems like a kind of a half-hearted effort. But I think those are slowly getting fixed.
What about, let's just go back to catalytic converters for a second. Any theft prevention news regarding that?
No, there's no good news, and there's no great way to protect your car. A lot of people are painting their catalytic converters pink, and some people are wrapping, and this actually works, a heavy metal cable, which you can buy around the converter. And this works simply because it takes more time to cut that out, and most thieves will move on. But the good news is that the price of palladium, the market price for palladium and platinum, the primary constituents in catalytic converters and what people want to steal them for, have dropped by half in the last few months. So the incentive to steal a catalytic converter is lessened somewhat.
What else is new? Are people going with smaller cars, or maybe are they getting bigger vehicles now because gas prices are going down? Seems to me like those two sort of go in tandem.
Yeah, there's been a really weird wave, and it seems like consumers increasingly respond less and less to price fuel price changes. But that said, vehicles are a lot more fuel efficient than they used to be, so the impact isn't felt as much by owners. If you're looking at non-EV sales, the strength is still in compact crossovers. With sedans, which used to make up 2 million units of the annual market, shrinking to about 500,000 units. So the old-school four-door sedan, things like your Camry and your Accord, they don't sell very well anymore.
Lots of text messages are already in for you, Tom. This one says, ask about carbon capture for cars, where existing engines can be maintained while recovering CO2 from the atmosphere. I don't know what I just said.
Yeah, there's a lot of different talk about carbon capture, and it's not so much on a vehicle because that's probably not going to work. That's just a lot of stuff that the owner of a vehicle would have to pay for. The carbon capture news right now is that Occidental Petroleum is working on a system to capture more carbon from the atmosphere when they produce oil than they would be using or creating. So that's one of the stories. But ultimately, carbon capture only works on one side of the equation. You still have to drive a car and create the carbon emissions. So I don't know if that's going anyplace. I don't think that that's something that's going to stall the development of electric vehicles.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, maybe an electric vehicle makes this question moot, but if I did care about the emissions from my gas-powered vehicle, perhaps some people would pay an upcharge to put something on there that captured the carbon coming out. That's what we're talking about, isn't it?
It is what we're talking about. And at this point, and maybe I'm a little bit behind the news on this, I'm not aware of a system that works efficiently or is in any way price effective. So I think that at this point, this is more speculative than anything.
847 said, I'm interested in purchasing an EV. Where do I begin my search? We drive a Lexus full size. I want to go electric.
Yeah, the best place to do is start to ask people you know that drive EVs to see what they like, and then start test driving stuff. You need to do also a couple of things, and you want to make sure that your house is suitable for putting a level 2 home charger in. In most cases, most recent constructions, it's a relatively affordable, easy thing to do. We're looking at anywhere from $1,500 to $2,500 if it goes well. But you want to have that at home, and be prepared to do that.
When you test drive EVs, say you go to Chevy, they've got a nice little one, and you go to Tesla and so on and so forth, is it just like a test drive in a gas-powered car? Because it really would feel alien to me. I know it's a car, but it's such a different kind of car. I don't know if I'd be aware enough to notice certain things. Do you just shop for it like you do the color, the look, the interior, where's the cup holder, that sort of thing?
You should do all that stuff and then be aware initially that you're going to be a little bit freaked out by how the EV feels different. For one thing, there's no noise when the vehicle starts up, just some lights go on the dashboard. But there's no engine to start. The motor doesn't turn at all unless you're moving. Secondly, the throttle response is immediate. You don't have to wait for revs to build to get power like you do with a gasoline engine. So that's actually a very nice effect. The power delivery is very smooth. And then there's a very weird sensation of hearing noise. And that's because when a gasoline engine is running, there's the fan and other noises. Those cancel out some of the road noise that you hear in an electric vehicle. And that's the sound of the tires on the gravel and stuff like that. As you start rolling, those sounds go away. But initially, you're going to be like, this car is loud. And that's not the case at all, actually.
Some people are going to miss that sound, right? You go on Lakeshore Drive here, there's plenty of people revving their engines, and they love that. That's it's funny because sometimes you'll hear a car go and it's doing 20 miles an hour, but there's some people that do love that sound.
They do, and it's replaced largely at low speed by sounds that electric cars and hybrids make when the engine isn't running to alert pedestrians of their presence. So there are weird things to get used to.
Okay, you've got a question for our guest. You can call or text 312-981-7200. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got more business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. McCafe bakery items are being phased out at McDonald's. Apple fritters, blueberry muffins, and cinnamon rolls are among the items disappearing from the menu. The company says it's been listening to customers and adjusting the menu based on likes and dislikes. The bakery items were added in 2020. Chocolate chip cookies, baked apple pies, and frozen desserts will still be available at McDonald's. Venture capital funding in Chicago rose slightly in the second quarter. Chicago Inno says the increase came despite a national drop-off in startup funding. Venture capital funding nationally has hit a six-year low. VC firms invested about $660 million in Chicago companies in the second quarter across 86 deals. That's up from $616 million in the first quarter of this year. The figure is still sharply lower than the $6 billion invested across 96 deals in the second quarter of 2022. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time. Here's Steve Alexander.
And it's a Mr. Fizz Friday.
Let me tell you how things are supposed to work.
Wait a minute, that's not Mr. Fizz.
The sun grows the food, the ants pick the food, the grasshoppers eat the food. It's a bug-eat bug world out there.
Now that's a clip from A Bug's Life. A Bug's Death is what Mr. Fizz wants to talk about after I thank the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, Mr. Fizz. Bugs, pests.
Well, Steve, you know, it's interesting. When we start to get some moisture, and we are, garden pests seem to come out. Japanese beetles have appeared this month. I was out in the rose garden yesterday, and lo and behold, there was one of the little critters out there. You need to pick them off if you can, or knock them into a can of water. And interestingly, if you disturb them, they don't fly away. They pull their legs and drop straight down. So if you see them on your plants, you can touch them and they'll drop. You can spray for them, use 7 or Temple or Talstar, but that's not necessary. There are things being advertised called beetle traps. Well, you don't want to use those because what they do is attract them from throughout the neighborhood. So they'll come flying in looking for a female. They're all males that come to those traps, but about 3/4 of them never find the trap, and most of them stop to feed while they're over there waiting to get their chance at the trap. So in the vegetable garden, aphids, they're beginning to show up. If you get out there quick enough and you can just see them starting, you'll find them, they're at the tip of a shoot. Snap the shoot off, put it in a garbage bag, and throw it in the garbage, and you're done with it. Squirrels like tomatoes. You can use traps. Now, we've been very successful with these have a heart traps with little peanut butter in them. The difficulty, what do you do with a squirrel when you get it? If there are other places in your neighborhood where they're not going to cause any trouble, you can move them there, but keep in mind, they will find their way back if they can. Rabbits, the only way I know to keep them out is to fence them out or invite a fox over for dinner. And that's what solved our problem. We have a neighborhood fox, and he keeps our place pretty clean.
Mr. Fizz, our gardening guru, Jim Fizzell. And speaking of gardening, one of my favorite events of the year, because I'm nosy, I like to peek into people's backyards in the Gold Coast, it's the Dearborn Garden Walk, also the Bucktown Garden Walk this weekend. And from the farm to your belly, today's National Mac and Cheese Day, World Kebab Day, and again, it's National French Fry Day. Some chains celebrated yesterday, but more are celebrating today because it is Friday. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Tom Appel on the phone line, the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. ConsumerGuide.com is the website. Tom, can I ask you some questions real quick?
Sure.
And give me quick answers. Where's the best place to buy a used car when you don't know anything about cars and you want to spend less than $10,000? Where should someone go?
Well, that's tough, and I think I would look at local listings. If you're trying to keep it under 10 grand, you want to avoid dealership markup, and that's not anything about dealers. It's just they have their own operating expenses to deal with. So you might want to try party-to-party sales, in which case, too, you want to make sure that your car is inspected by a mechanic after you decide you want to purchase it.
The speed of an EV, this listener says, is amazing. I definitely don't miss the sound of the motor at all, especially since the throttle response is crazy cool. You agree?
Oh, I do. And one of the interesting things about EVs, and it's a great equalizer, we're going to find that mainstream price cars are going to perform very much like old exotic cars. But I just drove the Kia EV6 GT, and that car does 0 to 60. This is a car you can buy for $58,000, does 0 to 60 miles an hour in 3 seconds flat, which is about as fast as a new Corvette and faster than many Ferraris. So, yeah, it electric motors really change things performance-wise.
847 said, what about the EV being more dangerous in crashes because of the crazy heavy batteries?
That's an interesting point. It's being mitigated largely, but EVs do weigh more, on average 800 to 1,000 pounds more than a comparable vehicle that would be gasoline-powered. You gain something from that and the better stability because the battery tends to be lower in the vehicle, so it won't roll over. On the other hand, you do have more inertia, but we've been dealing with that inertia, dealing with things like Suburbans and Excursions and Expeditions for years. So the crash test equipment generally keeps up with that.
Please ask your guest, do EVs have transmissions? If yes, can you get an EV with a stick shift? Sorry if this is a stupid question.
No, it's an excellent question. And here's the crazy answer. They have transmissions, but they're generally one-speed transmissions. So there's just one forward gear. And that's because the flexibility of the motor doesn't need multiple gear ratios. So they are technically transmissions, but they are one-speeds.
One of our listeners said that they rented an EV for a weekend and realized it wasn't for them. It made them too nervous, worrying about getting to charging stations, et cetera. So maybe that's not bad advice, huh?
Yeah, and as a rental vehicle, too, you're someplace where you may not be familiar and you're looking for public charging stations. So, yeah, I the headache and I think the fear of charging is greater. If you own an EV and have a charger at home, obviously the set of things you worry about is different.
You're going to be on with Steve and Johnny Saturday night, and you're going to talk about car theft, maybe somebody trying to carjack you. I only have 30 seconds, say, but can you give me the elevator version of that?
Yeah, I was recently charging an electric vehicle when a woman approached me, and she gave me a crazy story about how she needed a ride home. But she couldn't tell me where home was, and when she gave me a street in a general direction she pointed, there was no such street in that area. Long story short, this woman seemed to want to get into a brand new car with me and take me someplace. Deeply concerned about where that was headed.
I'll let you guys finish and expand on that story Saturday night with Steve and Johnny, right?
Absolutely, yep.
Okay, Tom. Tom Appel, you can find his stuff, as always, online at consumerguide.com, Consumer Guide Automotive Publisher. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Always don't have enough. We never have enough time for all the questions we get for Tom.